Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
For somebody your own age to warn you about something, I feel like it's more relatable.
Teens use a healthy kind of peer pressure to warn each other about the dangers of vaping. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, June 5th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, renewable energy projects are expanding above the Arctic Circle in Kotzebue.
The driving force in renewables is to be able to not have to burn diesel to generate power.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you find yourself asking, what's next? The University of Alaska Anchorage can point you in the right direction. With over 100 fully accredited degree programs and certificates to choose from, plus resources to guide you through your academic experience, your future is in your hands. Whether you're starting over or taking your career to the next level, discover what's next at UAA. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
No foul play is suspected after a missing hiker's body was found in East Anchorage Friday night, but a nearby homicide last week has heightened concerns. Police say a volunteer found 28-year-old Juan Toscano's body. He'd last been heard from Wednesday before going on a hike. Hours before Toscano went missing, the body of another man, 35-year-old Juan Wright, was found at a nearby trailhead. Police have deemed his death a homicide. A police spokesperson says Toscano's body will undergo an autopsy. She says investigators have found no sign of foul play or any links between Toscano's death and Wright's. Police also say there is no indication of any threat to public safety on the trails in the vicinity. Police had no updates on Wright's death today. They ask anyone with information on his case to contact investigators. A fire in the engine room of a small cruise ship in Glacier Bay National Park and Preserve prompted the evacuation of dozens of passengers and crew today. The Coast Guard says no injuries were reported and the fire was extinguished. The fire on board the Wilderness Discoverer was reported to the Coast Guard around 7:30 a.m. Uncruise Adventures operates the ship and says 78 passengers and crew members were on board at the time. The Coast Guard says all 51 passengers and most crew members were removed from the ship and placed on another cruise ship in the area. About 10 crew members remained with the Wilderness Discoverer, which was expected to be towed to Ketchikan. Uncruise Adventures says the cause of the fire is under investigation. The company says it will provide full refunds to the affected passengers. Teenagers from all over rural Alaska were in Anchorage last week learning about nicotine addiction. Although smoking rates have gone down in the state, many teenagers are vaping instead. The training was run by Rural Community Action Program, or RuralCAP, and the people running the training are high schoolers themselves. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra stopped by the conference and has this story.
I just wanted to introduce everyone to everyone because we're going to be spending the next couple days together and I want us to be comfortable.
That's Roey Armstrong. She's 17 years old and has been a teen ambassador for RuralCAP for 3 years.
Okay, so I'm just going to show this video that I made a couple years ago.
This year, 15 teens and tweens are joining the training. It's the 7th year of the program. RuralCAP flew in youth from around the state, including White Mountain, Chivek, and New Stuyahok. Peer relationships are really important to teenagers. So the aim is to educate teens on the real costs of addiction so they can teach each other. And hopefully that will create a healthy kind of peer pressure. Lena Adais is 16 and is also helping run the conference. She says learning from other teens can be powerful.
We hear things from adults like every minute, every second of our day. And for somebody your own age to warn you about something, I feel like it's more relatable.
Tobacco and vaping industries have historically targeted ads toward young people for a reason. The vast majority of regular adult smokers started before they were 18. In Alaska, almost half of high school students have tried vaping, and 1 in 4 have tried cigarettes. Adais and Armstrong have learned a lot in their 3 years. They can rattle off a string of facts about addiction.
An addiction can be formed in 10 seconds. That's like all it takes.
How advertisers and companies manipulate kids.
These big companies, they see young children being brought into the world and they see a dollar sign.
The harms of vaping.
It's like, oh, it's just some flavored air, when it's really like chemicals and metals going into your lungs.
And why young people are so vulnerable to addiction.
And like, I sound like my mom, but your prefrontal cortex is not fully developed until you're like 26.
That may be a phrase a mom or teacher would use, but Armstrong has gotten really good at sharing information in a relatable way. And that's the point. Charlie S. heads Rural CAP's peer educator program. He says he relies on teens like Armstrong because belonging is so important at their age.
They have that relatability, and they have what we call street creds. They have street credibility with their peers. And so they tend to get the attention of young people a lot better than an old guy like me.
In some areas of the state, teens are likely to have tried chewing tobacco or ikmik, which is a tobacco and ash mix common in Yupik culture. But S says vaping is common all over. And since it's still new technology, we don't know the long-term health effects yet.
We don't know with vapes. We know there's metals in them. We know there's vegetable oils in them. There's all kinds of things that aren't something you would put in your body ordinarily, but they're going in there now because of the vapes.
But the fruit and dessert flavors of e-cigarettes can make vaping seem harmless. And Adais says she has to work against the messages of social media posts that make vaping look cool. For example, people will share videos of tricks they can do when they exhale.
You also see the side of TikTok that it's like people showing off their cool ghosts with their vapes, and it's like, oh.
Adais says kids sell vapes over social media too, but she says social media can also help people quit. She says she's seen powerful videos from people posting about just that.
I'll just be scrolling and then I'll see this girl like putting a bunch of vapes in a cup of water, and I'm like, what is she doing? And then she was like, and then it's like, I'm quitting, guys. Day three. It's hard.
Out of the 15 kids at the conference, Armstrong hopes a few of them will want to become peer educators like her eventually. But she says even if they decide not to, they can make a difference.
At least they have this information. They can go back to their probably small like communities and small villages and share it.
With all their training, Armstrong and Adais know they can't make anyone stop vaping or say no to trying a cigarette. They can just give people the info they've learned and hope it sticks. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
Creating and managing 5 sanctioned sites across Anchorage for people without homes to camp in is not practical this summer. That's what several Anchorage Assembly members and the mayor's lead on homelessness issues said Friday during a meeting about recommendations from a community task force sent to the Assembly last month. Alexis Johnson is the city's homelessness coordinator.
I personally do not believe that we will be able to stand up 5 Cadillac plan sanctioned camps with the resources that we have with no financial plan by the date that's being asked of us. It's just not feasible.
She says the task force's ideas could be implemented next summer. The reception was disappointing for some task force members and at least 2 owners of properties near an existing unsanctioned campsite. Since the city's winter shelters closed, local experts estimate that about 700 people are now camping outdoors or sleeping in cars around Anchorage. Drug use, garbage, noise, and safety concerns are common at and around the larger encampments. Assemblymember Felix Rivera, who chairs the Housing and Homelessness Committee and facilitates the task force's work, urged his colleagues to consider running with at least some of the recommendations. That would also include asking private landowners to consider hosting a campsite and buying up to 90 portable units from the company Pallet Shelters.
The Sanctioned Camp Community Task Force said pretty clearly, we need to get this set up as soon as possible, period, point blank. Now it's in our hands, right? So I am amenable to amending that start time to something that may be more realistic for the administration.
Rivera says he'll prepare a scaled-back version of the task force's recommendations for the Assembly's upcoming meeting tomorrow, where he anticipates a close vote. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, smelt season in Bethel indicates that summer has arrived.
We get all this beautiful, natural, indigenous protein here, and it just can't be beat, man. You can't do it better than Mother Nature, you know.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You know that eating fruits and vegetables supports good health, but did you also know that frozen and canned produce offers the same health benefits as fresh? It's true. Whether fresh, frozen, canned, or from the land, eating fruits and veggies can lead to a long and healthy life. So when it comes to getting the fruits and veggies you need to stay healthy, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by Snap.
Governor Mike Dunleavy has appointed Tuckerman Babcock, a longtime Republican and former aide, to the University of Alaska Board of Regents. The Alaska Beacon reports that Babcock, together with the governor, orchestrated an illegal loyalty pledge scheme a federal judge ruled on 2 years ago. The governor's office announced Babcock's appointment last week after the Alaska legislature rejected a prior pick for the office. Lawmakers failed to confirm Bethany Markham to the 11-person board in May. Several sitting legislators said they believe Babcock is unlikely to be confirmed by the legislature when it meets next spring. In Dunleavy's first year, Babcock was a supporter of the governor's plan to sharply cut spending on state services, including the university. Markham's support for those cuts in 2019 was cited as a reason for her failed confirmation this year. Whether or not he's confirmed, Babcock will sit as a member of the board in the meantime, participating in the university's annual budgeting process and debates on policies. During his time as Dunleavy's chief of staff, Babcock was found to have illegally fired three state employees as part of an illegal loyalty pledge scheme. The state agreed to pay almost $500,000 to two Alaska Psychiatric Institute doctors to resolve a lawsuit stemming from the scheme. One of the country's largest dairy cooperatives is shrinking its half-gallon milk carton size. That's going to mean one less option for thousands of Alaskans enrolled in the federal nutrition program, WIC. Dairy Gold's ultra-pasteurized 64-ounce cartons are now 59 ounces, meaning WIC participants can no longer buy the product with their checks, e-cards, or vouchers. WIC participants in rural Alaska already contend with high prices and limited food options. For example, in Bristol Bay, the cost of milk is about twice the national average, and at times, Dairy Gold is the only milk brand on store shelves in Dillingham, the region's hub. Walter Pickett is the vice president of operations for the Alaska Company, or AC, a chain of grocery stores that serve rural Alaska and sell Dairy Gold milk. He says AC searched for other vendors without success.
And the closest alternative that we found is in California, and with the cost of freight from California to the port of Tacoma, which is where we ship all of our freight to Alaska, it was not deemed a cost-effective alternative.
Dairy Gold's change only affects ultra-pasteurized milk. Ultra-pasteurized milk lasts three times longer than other fresh milk products, a plus for perishables traveling to rural Alaska that spend significant time in transit. Pickett says AC asked Alaska's congressional delegation to try to change the federal standards so that WIC participants could buy the new-sized milk, and that process is ongoing. In a written statement, Dairy Gold said that the size change was in response to rising production costs. This is known as shrinkflation, and the phenomenon is becoming increasingly common around the world. Alaska's WIC program office did not respond to requests for comment in time for this story. During most of May, red dresses and other red clothing hung from trees around Ward Lake near Ketchikan. They were symbols of missing and murdered indigenous people from southern southeast. But as KRBD's Reagan Miller reports, almost 50 pieces of clothing disappeared and some have turned up stuffed into pipes around the trail.
Dozens of red clothes, some trailing adult-sized gowns, some child-sized frilly frocks, swayed from trees all around Ward Lake in May. They're a tangible reminder of real lives lost, each one representing indigenous people who were murdered or are still missing. But then, most of them disappeared before they were due to be taken down.
It's just disrespectful.
Michael Toole is the Victim Services Program Coordinator for the local tribe, Ketchikan Indian Community.
That's a terrible way to discount the reality of the lives of some of these people who are missing relatives who haven't received justice.
Toole says he checked on the dresses in mid-May. The tribe held a permit to hang the dresses through the end of the month. That's according to a U.S. Forest Service spokesperson.
And And there had been some that were, weathered. I mean, the weather was off and on, mixed bag with rain and wind, and some were tattered, but certainly none that I recall being missing.
There were 60 garments hung as part of the installation. When staff went back to take them down late last month, most of them were gone. The tribe checked in with Alaska State Troopers and the Forest Service, but they didn't know what had happened to the dresses. There was outcry on social media. The tribe's council issued a statement condemning what they called, quote, a hurtful and disrespectful act that undermines the efforts to bring understanding and raise awareness about the MMIP epidemic. They asked anyone with information to contact local law enforcement, but also to contact the tribe and learn more about the epidemic. Some of the dresses have started to turn up in the past few days. Pictures of wet, crumpled dresses appeared on social media.
A number of these dresses had been collected and discarded off the trail and covered up next to a culvert there.
Gloria Burns is Ketchikan Indian Community's vice president and the chair of the Social Services Committee.
They've been found in the lake vicinity, just, you know, back, almost like they were stuffed into the drain pipe.
Burns says the act left her with a deep feeling of sorrow. She says it felt like a, quote, intentional, almost vicious attack. Burns says that the tribe staff hung the dresses with remembrance and intention, trying to make it what she called a safe space.
And so when you're going through that process of trying to create a safe space, and then it's intentionally made unsafe, it feels very much like a violation. And I think, you know, the hard part is that missing and murdered Indigenous people has been happening since colonization. We really don't talk about it. You know, we haven't really spoke those, you know, to the outside community.
The Tribal Council encourages all Ketchikan residents to reach out to Ketchikan Indian community and learn more about the MMIP crisis. Burns also hopes that whoever removed the clothing talks to someone and tries to understand why they did it. In Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing cargo transportation to 9 Alaska communities. NAC offers options including cargo charters to get freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. If you find yourself asking, what's next? The University of Alaska Anchorage can point you in the right direction. With over 100 fully accredited degree programs and certificates to choose from, plus resources to guide you through your academic experience, your future is in your hands. Whether you're starting over or taking your career to the next level, discover what's next at UAA. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
The City of Nome and regional nonprofit corporation Kowarik partnered over the weekend on an electronic waste recycling event. KNOM's Greg Knight was at the 12th annual e-waste drop-off.
It would have been our 13th, but during the pandemic, we didn't host one.
Vanessa Tawbone is with Kowarik's environmental program. She says the aim of the e-waste collection is to get it not only out of Nome, but Western Alaska altogether.
In our regional communities, they have landfills that are unlined. And a lot of times they have uncontrolled burning where they just are able to burn on the ground. And really don't want to burn any of the electronic or possibly hazardous materials such as lead acid batteries and those types of items because they're, you know, they could have cancer-causing effects within the environment.
The Environmental Protection Agency defines e-waste as electronic equipment or items that are nearing the end of their useful life and are discarded, donated, or given to a recycler. E-waste frequently contains hazardous chemicals, predominantly lead and mercury. Examples of e-waste are older-style televisions with cathode ray tubes, computer towers and keyboards, laptops, cell phones, and VCRs. Tawbone says e-waste, if not removed from the region, can have devastating effects for subsistence living.
If you have something that's electronic and it burns, it'll send particles into the air that could go out as far as 200 miles. And we live off the land, and we do a lot of, you know, subsistence with picking greens and berries, and then we harvest animals off the land, like caribou and reindeer, and they're all eating off of the land, and we don't want to contaminate it.
All of the e-waste collected will eventually end up at facilities in the lower 48. Reporting in Nome, I'm Greg Knight.
This summer, Kotzebue Electric Association is expanding its renewable energy capacity. KEA now has a series of infrastructure projects in the works and hopes to reach a goal of up to 60% of its energy sourced from renewables. KOTZ's Desiree Hagen reports.
The member-owned energy cooperative has been a leader in rural Alaska in renewable projects for decades. Tom Adkinson is the general manager and CEO of KEA. He took over the position this April. He says he's excited about the independence from fossil fuels that upcoming energy projects provide.
We don't want to be held hostage to the availability or the price of fuel to be able to produce energy. Renewables allow you to get a stable price for your energy over a long period of time.
Renewable energy is getting more attention and funding around the state. Last Thursday, Governor Mike Dunleavy signed legislation that permanently established the state's Renewable Energy Grant Fund. But Kotzebue has been involved in renewable energy for a long time. In the mid-1990s, KEA developed the first wind farm above the Arctic Circle. In 2020, KEA installed the first phase of their solar energy project, about 1,400 solar panels, roughly 4 miles outside of town. At the time, it was the largest rural solar plant in Alaska. Last year, Adkinson says KEA saved burning 400,000 gallons of fuel because of renewable sources.
The driving force in renewables is to be able to not have to burn diesel to generate power, because diesel or fuel prices, as you know, are very volatile right now.
Adkinson says right now the association gets about 25% of its energy from renewable sources. The rest of KEA's power grid is supplemented by diesel fuel generators. The goal is to push that number up to 60% in the next 3 years.
We're just trying to overbuild the system as much as possible. Like, someday we want to hopefully be at 100% renewables.
In June, Adkinson says KEA plans to complete phase two of the co-op solar project. Once completed, it will be the second largest solar farm in Alaska and just a bit smaller than the number one spot in Willow. The co-op is continuing to work with Alaska Native Renewable Industries, or ANRI, a Native-owned and operated company out of Huslia, Alaska. ANRI has worked on solar projects throughout the Northwest Arctic, including the 2021 project in Shugnak. They are beginning a solar and battery storage project this summer in Noatak, and were the company contracted for phase one of KEA's solar project. Adkinson says working with ANRI has
not only been something that has helped our cooperative in terms of getting more renewable assets, but it has helped stimulate the economy a little bit by keeping the money from the project in the state and also employing some local folks at the same time.
Adkinson says additionally, KEA will be replacing some decommissioned wind turbines and adding two new turbines, as well as acquiring more battery storage capabilities.
We're at 25% renewable energy now. Once we get the two new wind turbines and the battery, that'll allow us to be to 50 to 60% renewable energy, which is kind of a tipping point for actually being able to save money.
Adkinson says KEA has not had to raise rates for more than 8 years and hopes that further development of renewable energy will continue to keep rates stable. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
In the Kuskokwim River hub city of Bethel, everything is seemingly connected to fishing in one way or another. The beginning of summer really means the beginning of the fishing season, and as KYUK's Evan Erickson reports, the frantic passage of thousands of smelt through Bethel last week was a signal that summer had begun.
We dry them, fry them, bake them, boil them, freeze them.
Smoke them. Dry them and smoke them. I smoke them and then I jar them like sardines, you know?
We whisk eggs, put it in, then put it in flour, then deeper them.
These are really good. I'm a bodybuilder. You could go up 50 pounds on these in like no time.
In front of the Joe Lomac building on the Bethel Riverfront, people with extended dip nets jockey for position along the seawall to catch the peak of the run swimming upriver from Oscarville. Bill Howell has been fishing the smelt since 1987.
It's all about timing. I mean, they could just come through for 6-8 hours and it's done.
But this wasn't combat fishing by any means.
What seemed to be on people's minds was spreading as much fish as possible around the community.
You want us to help you? We'll fill up your bucket.
We got lots already.
We'll fill up your bucket.
One man claiming that his legal name was Ricky Spider-Man tirelessly scooped up a dozen or more smelt in each net load to dole out to passers-by.
I'm trying to fill up as much of these as possible and just give it to the people that come by. Till people quit coming.
On a Bethel Facebook group, calls went out for sharing the harvest. Some volunteered their dip nets, and for those who couldn't make it to the riverfront, there were multiple willing delivery drivers. One man was even reportedly seen going door-to-door offering up the fresh smelt to any takers. Moses Dooney didn't even plan to fish the smelt, but he hasn't been able to return to his home village of Russian Mission on the Yukon River due to the runway being flooded. So he decided to give it a shot.
We're getting homesick, but I'm very happy to get some smelts. I will share these with my family members at Russian Mission. We don't get these at home.
The day before, Connie Pavla had gotten a hold of some of the smelt near Napaskak on their journey upriver to Bethel.
The ones we worked on yesterday, they're smaller than these. These are bigger. It's too fun. You get carried away. You overcatch too. You guys gonna get any more? Before they run off, then go attack. Holy moly, these are bigger.
Paul Roll and Katie Daniels only had to walk a few feet from their offices at the Lomac building to get a piece of the action.
You got the touch, Katie. Son of a gun. You got the touch.
Oops. No, I don't. Oh, she only caught one that time. What's going on, Katie?
Oh, I don't know.
Is it the reporter?
Yeah, I just ruined the vibe.
This is amazing. Where else can you go smelting 30 yards from your office door? And we're off the clock, too, by the way.
By early evening, the flow of smelt began to subside. Thousands of the nutrient-rich fish are being spread throughout the community thanks to a culture of sharing going back millennia. The smelt run marks the beginning of the season of harvesting, and for those living along the Kuskokwim River, it is just one example of nature's bounty.
Subsistence in general is the highlight of living in Bethel. Not having to eat all that factory farm junk from all over the planet. You know, I mean, we get all this beautiful, natural, indigenous protein here, and it's just, you just can't be beat, man. You can't do it better than Mother Nature, you know?
In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Chris Clint in Anchorage, Christina McDermott in Dillingham, Reagan Miller in Ketchikan, Greg Knight in Nome, Desiree Hagen in Kotzebue, and Evan Erickson in Bethel. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Dave Emmert, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Air Cargo, providing Gold Streak Express shipping for urgent deliveries throughout Alaska, with connections to more than 100 destinations in the lower 48 and Hawaii. More at alaskacargo.com.
And by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.